Good afternoon and welcome everyone to Parliamentary Library. My name is Diane Herriot and I'm the Assistant Secretary of the Research Branch. This is one of our Parliamentary Library lecture series, which enables us to bring distinguished visitors to the library to present on a topic of interest to the Parliament. Just to flag coming attractions, in September we'll have two lectures on the 14th and 21st with Neil Warren and Saul Eastlake on the issue of tax reform. So if you want to just flag that as your coming attraction. And because we're aware that in a busy sitting week, many members and senators and their officers can't attend, the lectures are taped and will be up on the library website shortly after we conclude today. Now, today's session is on the issue of slavery and human trafficking in Australia. The practice of slavery has been universally accepted as a crime against humanity, and the right to be free from enslavement is considered so fundamental that all nations have standing to bring offending states before the International Court of Justice. However, despite the ratification of numerous international conventions and protocols, slavery, servitude, forced and bonded labour persist worldwide, although there is little reliable data about their nature or extent. And Australia is not immune to this, being a destination country largely for victims of trafficking from Southeast Asia, as our speaker today will illustrate. Associate Professor Jennifer Byrne is the director of the Anti-Slavery Project, a specialist legal and policy centre in the Faculty of Law at the University of Technology in Sydney. Established in 2003, the Anti-Slavery Project is dedicated to eliminating all forms of trafficking and slavery through direct service and advocacy programs. It provides legal advice and representation to people who have experienced trafficking and slavery and advocates for changes to laws and policies to improve the protection of rights for people who have been trafficked. Jennifer's anti-trafficking work has been recognised through awards such as the UTS Vice Chancellor's Social Justice Medal in 2004, the Law and Justice Foundation Justice Award for Community Legal Centres in 2005, and the Henry Giblet Award by the Migration Institute of Australia in recognition of her outstanding contribution in the area of education on migration law. This year, Jennifer was named as the 2011 Zonta International District 24 Honorary Member in recognition of her work and achievements in the field of trafficking and advocacy for legal reform. So today, Jennifer will speak for about 40 to 45 minutes, after which she has kindly agreed to take questions from the floor. So could I ask you please to welcome Celsic.
Thank you, Diane. I'm honoured to be here today. I'm very honoured also to be introduced by you. Before Diane took up her position in the Parliamentary Library, she was very senior in the Australian Attorney General's Department and was responsible for implementation of the government's anti-people trafficking strategies. And the current level of cooperation that we have between community NGOs and government agencies is attributable to Diane's leadership in that role. Thank you. I'm also very honoured to be here in the Parliamentary Library, and you know, I note that I read back in 2004 Janet Phillips' research from the library about Australia's response to people trafficking, and of course she updated that in 2008. To all of you who are here today, I thank you most sincerely. I know that you are all incredibly busy, and I am very appreciative that you're here to join with us. I would like to tell you first of all what it means to be trafficked and enslaved. So thinking about the person that we know in Australia who may be identified as trafficked by the Australian Federal Police, by the Department of Immigration, or by a community agency. Here are some of the signs of trafficking and slavery that we know underpin the identification of these human rights abuses. So the words trafficking and slavery and forced labour and grave labour exploitation interconnect. But at the heart of all these terms, at the heart of the meaning of trafficking and slavery, is the gravest of abuses. It's about the control of a person's life, control of a person's livelihood. And here on this slide, you can see some of the indicia that we see every day in our work, and which Australian government officers, the Australian Federal Police and the DPP also experience when they are investigating and prosecuting crimes of trafficking and slavery. Now, over the last 7 years, there have been enormous steps forward. In the NGO sector, there have been alliances, steadfast alliances of groups of NGOs who have stood together and advocated jointly for reforms in Australia's response to trafficking. I'm very happy today to acknowledge particularly members of ACRAF who are here, and Slavery's had a very long involvement with the fine members of ACRAF. Thank you all for coming here today as part of your parliamentary tour. I'd like to first of all talk a little bit more about the Anti-Slavery Project. We've recently become a centre of the university, so we're getting used to calling ourselves Anti-Slavery Australia. And here's a recent photograph of ourselves, plus one. We have a legal practice, we have a research practice. We have over 70 clients that we're currently assisting who have been trafficked to and enslaved in Australia. We act for women and men who have been accepted as refugees into Australia because of slavery or because of trafficking in their country of origin, or because they fear for forced marriage on return to their home. One of the things that we've done is lodge, in partnership with the Sydney legal firm, 23 cases to the New South Wales Victims Compensation Tribunal, asking for financial compensation on behalf of our clients. So we've done 13 of those cases in-house, and the remainder have been done by Clayton Utes, a Sydney law firm. We also work with the Office of the Fair Work Ombudsman on behalf of our clients. We partner with many organisations, and we think that's the way to get things done. We work with many lawyers. One of the things that we've done is to receive a grant from the Attorney General's Department to raise awareness of all forms of trafficking in Australia. And on your seats, many of you will find a DVD, and if you don't have one, we have spares up here in the front. And this DVD contains three community service announcements which are designed to raise awareness of all forms of trafficking in Australia. So we focus on agricultural work, trafficking into a private home, and trafficking into a commercial kitchen. The scripts for the DVDs have been translated into 7 community languages. We've also made 4 films to raise awareness, and they're targeted to the general community, to lawyers, health practitioners, and secondary school students. Now, the first of these CSAs premiered on Monday night on Foxtel, who were going to run these CSAs for us for free. And I'd like to show you the CSAs. And I especially like to ask for some assistance. Thanks, Joanne.
Send me home. Dear Mother, back then I wondered how people work here in Australia. For confidential legal advice, contact Anti-Slavery Australia.
At first, my boss and his family seemed it nice, but then things changed. They say if I didn't work hard every day, I'll get deported. I had no money, I spoke no English. Before I escaped, I wonder how many women work as slaves here in Australia.
For confidential legal advice, contact Anti-Slavery Australia.
I came to this country because my cousin told me about a restaurant I could work in. Then they said I owed them $40,000. They threatened me and my family back home. Back then, I just thought that's how things worked. Here in Australia.
For confidential legal advice, contact Anti-Slavery Australia.
Well, I think this is about the first preview, first showing, apart from Foxtel. What do you think of them? I think they're powerful. They've taken a long time to make. A lot of attention, a lot of consulting around the scripts and the images. But translated into the community languages, I think they'll be especially useful. And we're also going to turn them into radio clips. Australia is a party to international conventions prohibiting slavery, trafficking and forced labour. And here are some of the most significant conventions in this area. The Trafficking Protocol, which Australia ratified in September 2005, has the objects of criminalising trafficking, protecting and assisting victims of trafficking, and enacting legislation or other measures to protect victims. Policies and programs are also developed through the Trafficking Protocol and through domestic implementation to protect those who have been trafficked or enslaved, in our case, in Australia. The definition of trafficking in the Trafficking Protocol is set out in Article 3A. Trafficking in persons means the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harbouring or receipt by means of threat, force, coercion, abduction, fraud, deception, and importantly, of the abuse of power or of a position of vulnerability or giving or receiving payments for the purpose of exploitation. When we look at the trafficking definition, we can see that it is understood best in three parts. So first of all, there is the process, which is recruiting or harbouring or taking receipt of a person through force, fraud, coercion, abuse of power, or of a position of vulnerability for the purpose of exploitation. And exploitation may include slavery, debt bondage, forced labour, sexual servitude. Australia inserted provisions into the Commonwealth Criminal Code in 2005, just prior to ratifying the Trafficking Protocol. And I'll come back to these provisions later, but the provisions set out offences in Division 271, trafficking in persons offences, which involve the use of force or threats or recklessness as to whether a person will be exploited. There are also aggravated offences, specific offences relating to children, and an offence of debt bondage. Division 270 of the Criminal Code sets out the slavery offences. And the offence of slavery is one of the most serious offences in the criminal code, attracting potentially up to 25 years imprisonment if the elements are proved. The offences involve a person who intentionally possesses a slave, engages in slave trading or in commercial transactions. This is the definition of slavery, which is taken out of the 1926 Slavery Convention. So slavery is the condition of a person over whom any or all of the powers attaching to the right of ownership are exercised. Any or all of the powers attaching to the right of ownership. Of course, slavery is unlawful. Nevertheless, this refers to a condition of a person who is treated like a commodity. Any or all of the powers attaching to the right of ownership are exercised. The High Court looked at slavery provisions in the case of the Queen and Tang. But before the case got to the High Court, it went to the trial court, the County Court in Victoria. And here Justice Michael McInerney addressed some of the arguments that were made by the defence to show that there, or to persuade the jury that there was not slavery. Many people believe that slavery is something that was abandoned centuries ago and involved people who were chained to transatlantic slave ships or kept on farms or otherwise imprisoned in that very physical way. We are facing modern day slavery, and Justice McInerney said, how could they run away? They didn't have a passport. They had limited English. They were isolated. They were threatened with deportation. They believed that they had a large debt that they had to pay off. They were coerced. They were controlled. So this understanding of slavery is a different understanding. It's a different picture of the traditional historical view of slavery that so many of us are familiar with. When the case went to the High Court, Chief Justice Gleeson said that slavery is the gravest of crimes. It's actually within the criminal code, it is a crime against humanity. And he said that it's important not to debase the currency of language or to banalise crimes against humanity. The question of whether a person has been enslaved is a complex one that involves questions of fact and degree. The ability to deal with a person as a commodity or as an object of sale and purchase may be a powerful indication that a case falls on one side of the line between harsh employment and slavery. This is the critical question. How can we tell when a case does involve harsh employment or when it's a crime? And this is the grey area, and there is no clear answer here. In summary, the High Court said that slavery involves an exercise of power over victims, the power to make the women in that case an object of purchase, the power to control and restrict their movements, and the power to use their services without commensurate compensation. So these were the powers of ownership referred to by the High Court in the case of the Queen and Tang. I'm now demonstrating up a technical hitch. Just bear with me for one moment. There just seem to be... Alright, I'm just going to proceed for a minute. I want to speak a little bit more about the trafficking protocol. So the provisions cover offences of trafficking in persons where the trafficker organises or facilitates the entry of a person into Australia by using force or threats to obtain compliance, or where the organiser is reckless about the person's entry into Australia and whether that will result in exploitation. Now, the trafficking offences hinge on those important preconditions, which is travelling to or facilitating of entry into Australia. So they are linked to that kind of movement across borders. You remember when we looked at the slavery provision a moment ago, there was no limitation as to geographic boundary there. Rather, the condition of slavery is one about control. And when you look at those provisions, an Australian citizen, a permanent resident, or any person, in fact, in Australia, according to law, may be in a condition of slavery. The trafficking in persons offences are limited and hinge on the entry into Australia for exploitation. Now, the forced labour offences, or forced labour convention, has also been ratified by Australia. And this is where the area between a civil offence and a crime becomes really important. So the forced labour means labour exacted from any person under the menace of any penalty and for which the said person has not offered himself voluntarily. That's forced labour. When we think about that, and when we look at what the ILO, the International Labour Organization, says about forced labour, you'll see that it's in fact almost impossible to distinguish between forced labour and slavery. With one additional caveat, I think, which is when we look at the Tang case, Chief Justice Gleeson did say that the ability to treat a person as an object of sale and purchase was an important factor. So the ILO says that forced labour is not just about low wages or working conditions. It doesn't include situations of economic necessity where a person feels tied to their job because of financial pressure or lack of other employment. It's a severe violation of human rights. It involves restriction of movement. The penalty can include losses of rights and privileges. And of course, the ILO says that the broader menace of a penalty is defined broadly to include physical violence or restraint, death threats to the worker, psychological threat and coercion, threats to report workers to immigration, threats to shame workers in their families or their communities. So, forced labour in Australian law is one of the outcomes, one of the forms of exploitation of trafficking in persons. But it does hinge on the bringing into or facilitating arrival of a person into Australia. There's no standalone offence of forced labour in the Australian Criminal Code. So the exploitation in the Criminal Code can occur where an exploiter's conduct causes a person to enter into slavery, forced labour, sexual servitude, or unlawful organ removal. So, slavery, trafficking, and forced labour clearly interconnect. There are three separate international conventions that address these important human rights abuses. And I believe that what we're seeing through practical experience and through the jurisprudence is that there's a merger in Australia and around the world in our understandings of slavery and forced labour. So while the two international conventions were set up initially back in the 20s to deal with different kinds of harm, over the decades, there seems to be more unanimity around the form of exploitation or the harm that can either be characterised as slavery or forced labour. Now, I'd like just to look at a couple of case studies. And of course, so let's imagine an international student in Australia who's working more than 20 hours a week. They're underpaid and they're threatened and assaulted. There are clearly state crimes there. Are there crimes of slavery or trafficking or forced labour? What other protections would there be for that international student? So on those facts, there's not trafficking in persons, and therefore under our current law, there's not forced labour. If the exploitation is severe enough, there may be slavery, but this case may not reach that very high threshold. So is there criminality there? We can't be sure. Beyond the state offences that would deal with the physical assault. There may be assistance through civil authorities such as Fair Work Ombudsman to obtain redress for underpayment of wages. In this case though, of course, a student who's working more than 20 hours a week is exceeding their visa conditions and could be liable to visa cancellation and removal from Australia for that purpose. So unfortunately, there's been a lot of cases reported in the media and to a Senate committee that looked into the welfare of international students that spoke about the coercion of international students who begin to work over 20 hours a week and then who are vulnerable to threat and vulnerable to their exploiter. An Australian citizen working in the textile industry who's paid $3 an hour. Clearly, it's an industrial breach. Clearly, Fair Work Ombudsman may have jurisdiction there. But is there criminality? Probably not. Working holiday maker who's working 7 days a week, long hours each day, with a debt of $30,000. Would that be trafficking? Not unless there's precursor conduct in the country of origin. Would it be slavery? It depends on the fact and the degree of the exploitation. Again, Fair Work may be able to intervene and assist, but depending on the working holiday maker's visa, and the way that they're using their visa, they also, in fact, may be in breach of their visa conditions because there is a limitation on those visas that working holiday makers work 6 months with one employer unless there's permission obtained by the secretary. What about this difficult one of a partner visa? So it could be a woman who's been sponsored to Australia for a partner visa. She holds a temporary visa. She's working 7 days a week. Her partner threatens her with deportation. She's assaulted. So again, what kind of exploitation is that? So understanding the nature of the exploitation, I think, is critical to then working out what the available remedies may be. And from looking at some of these case examples, I think that we'd see two things. Firstly, there's a clear connection between indicia of trafficking, forced labour and slavery, and of course harsh or exploitative work conditions. But depending on the nature of the person's arrival in Australia, there may be trafficking. Depending on the degree of harm and exploitation, there may be slavery. Otherwise, any remedy currently would be through civil law. Fair Work Ombudsman, for instance. Now, I'd like to make a few brief comments about the Employer Sanctions Act and the Worker Protection Act. Now, as you'd know, the Employer Sanctions Act has recently been reviewed by Stephen Howells, and there has been a report that's is now publicly available. And comments may be made in response to that report up to the 1st of September, I believe. So in this report, Stephen Howe concludes that the provisions in the Employer Sanctions Act are ineffective. They do not deter employers from abusing illegal workers, and they do not have the effect of educating the community. He has proposed a number of amendments to the employer sanctions provision that really are directed at boosting the penal clauses in that section, in those sections. So tougher penalties, $10,000 for employers who allow non-citizens to work. Importantly, the recommendation would also cover third-party labour suppliers. There would be a statutory defence to the strict liability offence, and that's important. I'd just like to make a few general comments. So as far as I can see, the review is focused on punitive measures to increase penalties and thus to deter. It's clear from our experience in the trafficking area that criminalisation alone isn't effective. We also need really good quality education of the whole community around these important issues. We need to ensure that there are good systems in place to support those who have been exploited. And we need to ensure that we have excellent systems in place to ensure that any person who is identified in this way as being exploited or working unlawfully in breach of their conditions or beyond their visa conditions is screened for the crimes of trafficking or slavery. The screening mechanism is really important. It would be a mistake to find an unlawful non-citizen working in breach and to respond by removing them as soon as practicable. That's the kind of situation that we saw many years ago before the Australian Government anti-trafficking response. So in that case, pre the Australian Government Action Plan, if a worker was found to be illegally working, they'd be taken by immigration to detention and then removed quickly. In response to parliamentary inquiries, legislation, community action, we now have an excellent system in place as it relates to the identification and protection of those who have been trafficked. Now, I know from speaking with ACRAB that there may not be a uniform response across the whole of Australia, but that's something that we can deal with through education. We need to make sure that the employer sanctions provisions are coupled or combined with support for victims and education for the wider community. Additionally, I'm concerned about the definition of work in the employer sanctions legislation. And that the definition of work is linked to a contract of employment, and it excludes domestic work. So I'd like to see a different and more inclusive definition of work that wouldn't exclude those who may be exploited in Australia. So the domestic exclusion is something that's particularly concerning to me. Now, the Australian anti-trafficking response is led at government level by the Anti-People Trafficking Interdepartmental Committee, which is chaired by the Attorney-General's Department. And here are all the government departments who collectively comprise the anti-people trafficking response in Australia. And this is probably why we have such a good response, because we're getting advice and input from government departments who have a whole range of varied expertise. So the response is effective and it is ongoing. The Interdepartmental Committee publishes reports. These are available on the Attorney General's website. This is the most recent one. I understand there'll be another released relatively soon. These reports are an invaluable resource because they bring together information about from immigration, from Red Cross, Office for Women, Attorney Generals, Australian Federal Police and the DPP. So they're an excellent compendium to understanding anti-people trafficking measures in Australia. Now, I've been speaking about people trafficking and smuggling, and I'll just note, of course, I've been speaking about people trafficking and slavery, and I'll just note that trafficking is not smuggling. So there is a clear distinction. I'm not addressing my remarks to people smuggling. One of the things that we have in Australia is a visa approach that was introduced in January 2004 and was amended in 2009. This visa approach enshrines best practice to ensure that any person in Australia who is identified by the Australian Federal Police as being trafficked will be given at least 45 days support and protection, no strings attached. That's an important time. It's a tribute to international best practice standards, which call this 45 days a period of reflection, to give a person time to think about what they want to do, to get support, to seek legal advice about their options and so on. That period of 45 days can be extended in rare circumstances, but sometimes that may go to 90 days. Then if a person doesn't have a visa, they may be offered a criminal justice visa, and that would keep them lawful in Australia, would allow them to work, would allow continued support by the Australian Red Cross while the police are investigating. At some point, there will be consideration by the Australian Federal Police of making a recommendation that that person be considered for a permanent visa, depending on their contribution to a police investigation or prosecution and whether they would be in danger on return to their country of origin. Now, just before I move on, the Australian Federal Police over the period 2004-10 have investigated and assessed 270 cases of suspected trafficking and referred 39 cases to the Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions. I think it's true to say that over this period from 2004, there's been a big learning curve. So we've all been learning how this works, how the law works, how the support system works. We can see that from 2004 up until June last year, there were 155 visas granted to people who were identified as being trafficked. And 155 people who received support from the Australian Red Cross. Country of origin of those identified was predominantly Thailand, followed by Malaysia, and then South Korea. Part of the national approach is the National Roundtable on People Trafficking, and that roundtable brings together government and key stakeholders to consult about these issues. One of the outcomes of the roundtable was to develop guidelines for NGOs working with trafficked people, and these really are best standards, best practice professional standards. Now, the Red Cross provides support for victims of trafficking, and they are funded to do that by the Office for Women on behalf of the Australian Government. And the support includes accommodation, assistance, obtaining legal advice, medical support and counselling. But we are seeing through our experiences that there are increasingly difficult and emerging issues which are not covered by the current support program. Some of these issues we never anticipated, but through working with women, working with men, we see that there are now emerging problems. I guess initially we were all occupied with the identification and immediate support, but now we're seeing people start to emerge through the program. We see that they may not have yet had good access to English language training or vocational training. They may not have secure housing, they may be couch surfing, in some cases living in the workplace because they can't find housing. Importantly, as we start to work with people who have been trafficked and offer assistance obtaining criminal compensation, we see that there's a process of re-traumatizing. And there's not an equivalent counseling response. And that's been really difficult and something that was not anticipated by us. So we're really looking at the support program and looking how we can, you know, meet these difficult and emerging needs. Now, one of the things we're looking at is forced marriage, and we've addressed an Australian Government Attorney General's discussion paper on the issue. We think that more needs to be done around forced marriage in Australia. There needs to be more research and community consultation. There needs to be a decision about whether we enact protective measures, such as through the Family Law Act, or punitive measures through the Criminal Code. But the degree of harm that accompanies forced marriage is severe and includes psychological injury, sexual assault, domestic violence, forced imprisonment and social isolation. And sometimes this is also trafficking. There are a number of policy responses that we've made. Sometimes we've found that those who have been on the program are not offered a permanent visa and will seek to return home. Ideally, there would be an effective system in place to ensure that they are helped to return home. But from our experience of working with trafficked people, it appears that there is not a clear pathway to reintegration. There are programs that are mooted as being effective, but our clients tell us that they don't necessarily want to access those programs because they fear stigma and shame if they're put in the trafficked women's shelter, for example. So that's an area that needs some greater work. Effective remedies. We've been working with men and women in New South Wales, but in each of the states, there's a different scheme that relates to criminal compensation. So there's a couple of approaches that we'd like to see that would streamline this. One would be introducing a national compensation scheme. The other would be to strengthen state and territory schemes, or possibly try and achieve some sort of harmonisation. But that's an area of current work. We have a seminar on this issue on the 18th of November. This is what we're doing at the moment. So we have a Sydney anti-trafficking network. We're working on forced marriage compensation, support issues, the criminal law framework, and the supply chain. I'd like to thank you all very much for coming today and, you know, bearing with me through this tour of the anti-trafficking and anti-slavery response in Australia. And if you'd like to contact me or us at Anti-Slavery, please do. I'd love to speak with any of you. Thank you.
No, you're not off the spot yet, Jennifer, because as I said, we are going to have some questions. I might be rude enough to ask the first one.
Oh dear.
We see the most published or publicised, I think, form of trafficking is trafficking for purposes of sexual servitude, sexual exploitation, and in fact that was the circumstances in the Wake Tang matter. I was wondering, in your caseload, you said I think you had around 70 current clients, what sort of industry sectors they might have been exploited in?
Our current caseload reflects the national statistics, so most of our clients were trafficked into sexual exploitation, into debt bondage, or into harsh working conditions. But we're seeing an increasing number of our clients who are men, who are trafficked into other areas, and women who are trafficked into domestic work. So I think with the community service announcements and with the awareness raising that so many groups are doing around Australia, that there will be an increased focus and an increased identification of people who are trafficked into other areas. Mm-hmm. And we have a response to deal with it.
Thank you. Yes.
You mentioned briefly kind of the supply chain, I guess, or and I'm wondering Is there much evidence of kind of, I guess, coordinated groups that are coordinating this kind of activity of trafficking people to Australia? Or are the majority of cases just individual cases where there's no real link between the kind of numbers of people? Does that question make sense? I'm asking, is there any organisation in terms of...
Yeah, the Australian Institute of Criminology and the Australian Crime Commission have researched patterns of trafficking, and the conclusion seems to be that there is often organisation, but it's organisation at a small level. So it's not the mafia style, triad style organisation of crime that we're seeing that underpins trafficking into Australia. On the issue of the supply chain, most of the focus here has been on particular products, specifically chocolate. So looking at equities in the production of chocolate around the world, and looking at developing good, effective, fair trade policies.
And I think there's been some recent publicity around fishes.
Yes. Only today, in the Sydney Morning Herald, you may have seen a report that the New Zealand government is instituting an inquiry into allegations of exploitation of 2,000 foreign fishes in New Zealand territorial waters. So reports of exploitation emerged through a University of, I think it was South Australia study, that where there were interviews of many fishers, foreign fishermen on board ships in New Zealand, reports of horrendous working hours, conditions on board ship, physical abuse, and importantly, no payment, inadequate payment in comparison with the New Zealand crew. So this is an area of labour trafficking, like many other areas of labour trafficking, where there's been insufficient focus so far.
I think just up the back and then you,
Maddie? Yeah, I just have a question about organ trafficking. You mentioned it very early on in your presentation that that was one of the forms of trafficking that can occur. Is that something we see much of here, or have you come across much of in terms of the cases that you've seen?
There's been in Australia one report of organ trafficking recently that attracted some media, where Minister for Home Affairs and the AFP commented. I'm not aware of any other cases in Australia, although we are aware through hearing from Australian peak medical bodies that there is a program probably organised on an individual level that involves Australians travelling overseas to obtain an organ. So sometimes this is called transplant tourism.
Yeah.
And that's a matter of grave concern. There's been no research yet, but it will involve exploitation of the donor at the very least. Very concerning issue. But I can just a little bit more on that. I think that's really important in Australia, though, that we look at that and make sure that the screening mechanisms that we have in place at hospitals around Australia where transplants are done are adequate, so that if there is an exploitative or coercive relationship, the person doing the screening has the skill to be able to pick up that the donation of the organ is not in fact voluntary.
I'm just interested in what sort of paths people would be coming to Australia. Is it through the ports? And what, do you have any sense of what proportion of the people who have been subjected to trafficking have come on visas of some kind, or have sort of come here on a ship and just been sort of tipped off at the port and then...
Well, I think all the cases that we know about have involved people entering Australia on an aeroplane holding a visa. Now, sometimes the visa doesn't allow them to work, but they do work. That was the case in the Wei Tang case, where those entering Australia held visitor visas, but they worked. So there's a distinction, an important distinction here probably, between the pattern of entry into Australia that we see through people smuggling and that through people trafficking. So in all cases there's a visa that I know about.
And is it, sorry, just to follow up, is that because the ones without a visa would be much harder to find, or that you have a good sense of that, aren't you?
Well, Australia is isolated, and it's actually really hard to come here. The boat sort of falling apart, where there is usually picking up by the coastal authorities or the Navy, and generally the people on those vessels are seeking asylum. But, you know, the pattern of trafficking that we know through all the research is different, which is that it involves people coming to Australia holding a visa. Sometimes, concerningly, the visa that they hold may be a visa that entitles them to work, such as holding a 457 visa, and yet being exploited makes the identification particularly challenging.
I think there was one right in the back that was long-standing, and then you, and then there's someone over there.
Just a personal question, Jennifer. I mean, it must be so hard in dealing what you do with all the time and some of the cases that you hear about and expose to yourself. Does that have any impact on, like, how you sleep? It must be horrendous sometimes.
I eat a lot of chocolate, drink a lot of red wine. And we'll delete that part from the audio.
Okay.
We talk to each other. It is, you know, it can be really traumatic. Mm-hmm. We don't have systems in place for supervision or counselling, although we could access it if we want to. But I guess we're lawyers, and you know, with that comes some professional training as well. So we can compartmentalise a bit, but sometimes we can't, and then we talk to each other. And that seems to help a lot.
Jennifer, in the case of the organ transplant case that was written up recently in the papers, has there been any follow-up about that? Do you know, is there going to be a prosecution, or has there been, or do you know of anything happening? A minister asked us that this morning, actually, and I didn't know.
Well, I think Minister O'Connor addressed that in the press.
I didn't know.
And so I don't know anything other than what I read in the report about that case.
Oh, I see, thank you.
But I think he did say it was an ongoing investigation.
Right, thank you.
Jennifer, I've been working with the Red Cross, who have the tender for services, and I understand that that tender finishes next March. Who decides whether they'll get the next one? Is there a review? What's the process for those providing the services?
We might take the response from the office we're in.
Hi, so I'm Anne Moran. I work with the office schoolmen in Traxia, and we manage the support for victims of people trafficking program. So we fund Red Cross to do that. So you're correct that contract will go till March 2000, no, till end of February 2012, and we're currently in the process of doing a selection process to determine who will get that contract. We're, as part of that process, we're looking at, I suppose, refining and increasing the flexibility of the way the program is running.
So. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just a quick one about communication with people that you want to get in touch with and you want to get in touch with you. I noticed that your public service announcements are going to be broadcast on Foxtel. Is there any potential for those things to be put in community languages and community newspapers?
Yeah.
How do people find out about you, and how do they recognise that this is
Our communication strategy is enhanced by Foxtel, and they're showing the CSAs for free for 3 months. We're also paying Val Morgan to show them through cinemas, and we've put them out to the free-to-air TV. All the scripts have been translated into 7 community languages. We're going to try and ask SBS to show them in their community TV segments, and we think that they can also be used as radio announcements.
And perhaps the last question, second last question, we need to finish quite soon. Yes.
I'm just wondering, does Fair Work Australia report cases to you? Do you get cases through the police?
Do you know, I think that's actually a really important point. No, they don't report to us, but I think that there could be a clearer pathway of coordination between the AFP and Fair Work, and through other agencies as well. So that's probably something that does deserve a little bit more focus.
And I think there was one more over there.
I know so far Anti-Slavery Australia focuses on people coming into Australia with Australia as the destination of human trafficking. Do you ever see cases of the reverse where Australians are coerced overseas?
Look, we haven't seen that ourselves. I prefer to the United States Trafficking in Persons report for 2010, where they reported an Australian citizen being trafficked outside Australia. I don't know any other circumstances around that case. So generally Australia, in the framework of discussion, is considered to be a destination country rather than a source country.
Okay, thank you. I think with that we might close. I'd like to thank you all for coming to listen, and very much like to thank Jennifer for her presentation.
Thank you.